Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Christopher Beasley. I'm the attorney for the defendant appellant in this matter, Keith Green. My registration number is 13997. I know you all have read the briefs in this matter. I do want to touch briefly on the facts. I think this is a fairly simple and straightforward issue or issues that we have raised on appeal in this matter. The primary error that we urge the court to consider today is the error of the trial court in not admitting people or defendants exhibit A at the trial, which is of course was the printout of the victim's cell phone text records for the day of the incident in question here. The defendant first moved for admission of defendant's exhibit A during the testimony of the victim here. The defendant asked the victim through counsel, do these appear to be cell phone records or the records of the printout from your cell phone for the day in question? After comparing a couple of the text messages that were admitted in the evidence through the people's evidence, she said that yes, they did appear to be her text. Our position, of course, is that exhibit should have been admitted at that time, and the defendant, therefore, would have been permitted to examine the victim regarding some of the text in question. And, you know, there's a lot of text. There's two and really only one that is relevant that did not come in this case.
So if I understand it, you're saying she authenticated it?
Yes, I am saying that because the grounds for admission, the foundation required under CRE 901 is very simple, that the exhibit is what it purports to be. She said it was, should have come in at that time. The court did not allow it to come in at that time, citing additional foundation that was needed, specifically how the exhibit was generated. So then later on in the trial, the detective testifies and is asked, how was defendant exhibit A generated? And he said, how it was generated in a forensic examination of the victim's phone at the Lakewood Police Department. At that time, that exhibit should have been admitted. At this point,
so there's no question of relevance. It can just come in. It's been authenticated, and so it comes in under 901, regardless of its relevance.
Well, relevance, that's a separate objection. And in fact, the second time the defendant moved for admission of the exhibit, the objection from the people was on the grounds of relevancy. And they asked, now there's 136 text messages. They asked, and as they point out, as the people point out in the brief, the majority of them were before the defendant and the victim ever met up on the night in question.
Okay, so do I understand correctly then? You offered it, the objection was only on the basis of authentication, and you're arguing that given that that was the only objection, that the court abused its discretion when it granted the objection.
Well, certainly my argument is that the court abused its discretion, but the objection the second time the defendant moved for admission of A was not on grounds of any sort of foundation. It was only on relevancy, and in fact, the people asked only the text messages that are relevant to this case should come in. So it should have cut at least the ones that are relevant to this case, and I will get, of course, to the relevancy of the particular message that was most important here in a minute, if you'll permit me. But the court at that time denies admission, finding, well, yes, I find that these are the text messages from the victim's phone, but we don't know whether she sent them or someone else sent them. So that's the second grounds upon which the exhibit was not admitted. The court erred at that point because, well, first of all, the court then maybe 5 minutes later during the trial, and of course appearing in the transcript, said that the inference can be drawn that these are text messages from the victim. She's not passing the phone back and forth. Plus, the complaint of text message that didn't come in came in sandwiched between two messages that there was testimony at the trial that she did, in fact, send out. So then it becomes the issue of this conditional relevancy. The text message in question is relevant under Crespi and Taylor, cited in the briefs, if the jury can, by preponderance of the evidence, make a finding of the fact that the fact is true that makes the text message, in this case, relevant to the case. So certainly the inference could be made that she sent this message. That's the conditional fact upon which relevancy is determined, and the court finds that she's the one. So certainly the jury could have found that she was the one. So certainly I think that the court erred in not admitting defendant's Exhibit A. Because remember, the standard is very simple. Under 901, it is what it purports to be. We have the victim, we have the detective saying it's what it purports to be, the text records, and we have the court even finding that it's the text records. So the only issue would be relevancy as far as that goes. And clearly, the text message complained of, "Can you pick me up?" is relevant because the court or the jury heard evidence during the trial that the defendant, in his interview with the detective the same day as the offense, said, "I was going to give her a ride to my place. She was going to get a ride home from there." The detective asked the defendant, as the evidence showed at trial, "Well, was she texting while you're driving out to Lakewood?" She said yes, or he said yes, and that he assumed that the victim was texting to arrange for a ride. Well, now we have a piece of documentary evidence supporting that, not reasonably subject to any kind of question as to whether or not she sent the message out, and clearly that's relevant.
So, Mr. Beasley, I'm hoping that you will address why, assuming there was an error in not admitting the document, whether any error was harmless.
On the harmless error aspect, Your Honor, an error is considered harmless if, and it's cited in the people's belief, if a reviewing court can say with fair assurance that in light of the entire record of trial, the error did not influence the verdict or impair the fairness of the trial. This was a very close case. There were numerous discrepancies in the victim's testimony. There were the verdict of the jury shows that this was a close case. The fact that the defendant was found not guilty on both original charges and only found guilty of a lesser included offense on the sex assault matter, that shows that it was a close case. The relevant, or it can only be harmless error if we can find, well, that couldn't have changed, couldn't have affected.
How could it have affected, if it had been admitted, how could it have affected the outcome?
Because the text message directly supports the defendant's version of what occurred as the jury heard through the testimony of the detective at trial.
How does it? I'm having trouble following how it does. The text message that we're talking about is the one about come pick me up, right?
Can you pick me up?
Can you pick me up?
Letters and such, text and language. Yes, that's the primary message. That's the message we were talking about here, yes. The testimony at trial, the defendant, of course, did not testify, but his statements to the detective came in. His statements were to the effect that, well, you know, there's this whole business, they were going to go to the Denver diner with this other couple and all like that, but instead the victim is surprised that instead they're going to my client's house or apartment. The detective testified that when he interviewed my client the same day as the offense, that he told him, no, we didn't think they were going to go to the diner, so we weren't going to the diner out either. And this is, of course, in direct contravention of what the victim testified to at trial. I was going to give her a ride to my house. She was going to arrange a ride home from there. So that's the testimony that the jury heard through Detective McComb. Then you have documentary evidence. Can you pick me up? That sure sounds like that's supporting my client's version of what the arrangement between the two of them was that night.
Still focusing on the harmless
yes
aspect, what about the fact that there were two witnesses who saw her running out of the building hysterically, crying, saying she had something bad happen to her and it had to do with rape, and that a police officer also said that she was hysterical when he showed up.
That's damning evidence to my client. There can be no doubt about that. However, can you say that it's harmless when you have, you know, you have all this evidence coming in on the people's side, including many, several text messages between the victim and her friend that she went to the bar with that night, and then you have one text message that even, you know, with the testimony of her emotional state after the trial or after the alleged assault, when you have some kind of evidence that supports his version, I don't think that that can be found harmless. And with all due respect, I don't think it can be your decision as the reviewing judges in this matter to substitute and say, well, I sure would have found him guilty. No, that's not your role. And I don't think that it can be found to be harmless when there's any kind of evidence that supports his version of what happened. She was extremely emotional during the trial. And the jury, of course, sees that she's very emotional during the trial. And they can assume that she's a very emotional person, and that could have been the reason for her demeanor. And the fact that he was found not guilty of the original charges shows that there's some doubt as to the reasons why she is so frantic when seen out on the street after the assault in this case. So I really don't think that it can be harmless. The abuse of discretion standard, I think that, you know, arbitrary, unreasonable, unfair, it's arbitrary because the court denies admission of the exhibit because he doesn't find that there's a foundation that she sent the text. Then he turns around and finds that she sent the text. It is unreasonable because the judge did not allow the defendant to examine the victim regarding the specific text until the text or the Exhibit A was admitted in evidence, but then he denied the admission of Exhibit A because of the fact that no questions were asked of the defendant, or the victim rather, regarding the text messages. It's unfair because the text messages from the plaintiff's side came in and the text messages from the defendant's side were not allowed. Under all the circumstances, I think that this is a perfect case to find abuse of discretion. It is difficult to imagine what would constitute an abuse of discretion if not in this case.
Your argument also goes to Exhibit A and B.
Well, B came in.
Right.
So
Exhibit A didn't come in. It was an abuse of discretion that Exhibit A did not come in. And it was not harmless error for Exhibit A to be excluded.
Precisely.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Erin Grundy, registration number 41271, and I represent the people. The defendant's conviction should be affirmed because the trial court did not abuse its discretion in failing to admit an exhibit for which no foundation had been laid, that was not relevant, and certainly, even if the trial court did err, it is harmless in this case. Now, generally, the people agree with the defendant's recitation of the facts at argument. There are a few issues I'd like to point the court's attention to. If we start at the November 2nd transcript, which is the first part of the victim's cross-examination, the defendant asks the victim about two specific text messages. Those are the text messages between the victim and her friend, CF, that the prosecution had admitted through the snapshot of the victim's iPhone. Those are the only text messages that the defense ever asks the victim as to the substance to. After she's identified those two text messages on Exhibit A, the defense then says, so based on this, therefore, is this a complete, are these your cell phone records? The prosecution moves to voir dire the witness for the admission of the exhibit, And she says she has no idea how it was generated. She's not aware of how the timestamps were created. And she's never asked about any of the 134 other text messages contained on this document. The court says there's an inadequate foundation here. The defense says, okay, I'll admit it through another witness. Now, the court certainly didn't preclude the opportunity to lay further foundation, to discuss some of the other messages at issue in this case, but the defense chose not to on cross-examination. The cross-examination of the victim spanned the course of 2 days, November 2nd and November 3rd. And as the court notes in its November 4th rulings, it was extensive cross-examination over many inconsistencies in the victim's testimony. Then we move to November 4th, where Detective McCone is on the stand testifying. Very early in his testimony, the defense moves to admit Exhibit A again. The detective takes a look at the exhibit and says, well, it looks like most of these aren't relevant. But he certainly doesn't have any background to lay foundation as to who sent the messages, to whom they were sent, with the exception of those that he'd specifically talked to the victim about with CF. He can't lay foundation, and he certainly can't overcome a hearsay objection. Now, the prosecution objects at this point, and they object based on relevance here. When we look to page 32 of that November 4th transcript, the defendant then says, the fact that I didn't ask her about it, incidentally, if I had asked her, the answer would undoubtedly have been, I don't remember. You don't have to establish a foundation for this, from asking a witness who, again, is going to say she doesn't remember, when you have the actual cell phone records. It's beyond me. The court notes that the proper method of bringing these statements in, if indeed the defendant wanted to admit the statements, would have been to give the victim an opportunity to agree or deny whether she'd made the statements, and then impeach her based on a prior inconsistent statement. That didn't happen here. The defense certainly had the opportunity through the very extensive cross-examination, but chose not to. The detective could not have admitted the substance of those 134 text messages that didn't come in. Now, Exhibit B did come in, based on the proposition that the defense believed it was relevant that the victim texts a lot. The victim agreed that she does, in fact, text a lot, and the record showing that she sent or received 136 text messages on the day of the incident does come in. The jury's certainly aware of this. They're aware of the text messages that the prosecution had admitted through CF. The defense is also able to ask Detective McCone whether the victim sent another text message from the defendant's garage. Detective McCone agrees that she does, and that this message was not sent to CF. It's not a part of that conversation that we see coming in, either through the picture of the victim's iPhone or through Exhibit B. So the jury's aware that the victim does send another message to another party while she's in the defendant's garage. This certainly does go to harmlessness. We also see that the trial court's ruling on November 4th, where the defendant essentially suggests that the court agrees that foundation had been laid, that these text messages were on the phone. What the court actually agrees to is that foundation had been laid, that there were text messages on the phone. And that fact does come into evidence through Exhibit B. Certainly goes to harmlessness, particularly given that the "can you pick me up" supports an idea that the victim was going there voluntarily. Now, the jury acquitted the defendant of false imprisonment here and only convicted him of attempted sexual assault. So the "can you pick me up" would be relevant to the false imprisonment claim, but is not relevant to the attempted sexual assault. We see that the jury certainly looked at the victim's credibility at issue here. We had several witnesses testifying, including the two that found her running down the street, partially clothed, in a sketchy part of town in the middle of the night, saying that she'd had something bad happen to her and it had to do with rape. We also have her two friends testify who saw her enter the defendant's vehicle and say that they planned to meet up together at the Denver diner. We have, in this case, overwhelming evidence of what we're looking at. And more importantly, the defendant was acquitted of the charge that this would have been relevant to. So certainly, even if the trial court erred in denying the admission of 136 text messages, any error was harmless because it didn't impact a substantial right of the defendant. It's neither unreasonable, arbitrary, nor was it unfair. If the court has no further questions, the people would rest on the further arguments in the brief. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I have a minute and 41 seconds left. Two points that I do want to address on rebuttal is the first, the argument that the defendant should have asked questions about the text messages. The record is clear. During the first day of the trial on November 2nd, the defendant did seek to ask questions about specific text messages, and the, I want to say the verbatim words of the court were, if you're going to start asking questions about specific messages, you have to have that exhibited first. So the argument that the defendant should have asked questions, I don't think holds a lot of water. Secondly, the argument that on November 4th, during the cross-examination of Detective McCone, and the second attempt to admit Defendant's Exhibit A, where the court made the finding about, that was the finding about whether the inference can be made that she sent these text messages, or the inference can be made that these were text messages appearing on your phone, as the people suggest. It is clear from the record, the court said that we can, the inference can be drawn, I believe, I know the word inference was used, that she sent these. The court goes on to say she's not passing the phone back and forth. There's only two of them in the car. She's not passing the phone back and forth. So the finding of the court was clearly that she sent the text messages, which again was the grounds upon which it was not admitted. I thank you for your consideration of this case, unless there's any other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We accept this case as submitted. We will issue our opinion in due course. We have no other cases on the docket this afternoon, and so the division will stand in recess until further notice.